You're starting to dabble a little bit in Azure. And where do you start? Where's the easiest on-ramp? But what are all the side benefits as well? We're going to talk to a company that did just that. They just ease their way in. All of a sudden, everything explodes. That's what we're going to talk about, opportunity, and it's Rex Animal Health on this episode of Dev Radio. Hi, and welcome to the next episode of Microsoft Dev Radio. I'm Jerry Nixon, and we're excited to talk to you today about a really straightforward solution that you'll be able to apply to your own company and to your own ideas, I think in an easy way. But before we even get started, I am so lucky to have my favorite evangelist in the whole wide world here, Rachel Weil. She's in Austin. She's been an evangelist for just a handful of years. I'm lucky to know her. Rachel, thank you for being on the show today.
Glad to be here.
Tell me about Austin. Tell me about evangelism in Austin. What's going on?
Austin is beautiful. I've actually just passed my 1 year mark being at Microsoft, so that's an exciting
congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you. It feels like years and years, right? It's been really awesome. Austin is beautiful. Beautiful January weather, and cool. Excited to talk about Azure today.
I'm glad you're on the show. I really am, and. Another evangelist is on the show. We have Tim Riley, who snuck in at the last minute. Hi, Tim. How you doing?
I'm doing all right, Jerry.
Tim, I'm only kidding. I'm really happy you're here. You're in San Francisco, though, right?
Yep. Out of the reactor in San Francisco, 3rd Market Street. If anyone's in the area, we'd love to have you.
Nice. Now, a handful of people may not even know what a reactor is. Tell us real quick.
It's a developer meetup space kind of area. It's constantly in flux. We're doing all sorts of different meetups, events, stuff out of the area. So
it's one of the coolest space. You aren't the only one. There's one in, where's the other one? Is it in New York?
Philly in New York.
Philly, New York. Yeah. That's right. And so it's just got all the right energy. You know what I mean? It's trendy, cool. All these cool people are there talking about all these neat things. It's really neat. And you're there. Who wouldn't want to be there? You know what I mean? It's great. Meanwhile, Amato Gula, he's the CEO of Rex Animal Health. He's here on the show to kind of talk about the solution and it's the subject matter here. Amato, thanks for being on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
Now, who are you? Where are you located?
So I am out here also in the Bay Area. I'm a former drug development scientist that decided to start his own company after not wanting to be a professor anymore. Okay. Rachel's husband and I go way back, actually. That's how we knew each other from before. We met at a conference back in undergrad and kind of been friends since. And then eventually I started this company thing after, you know, you go through that mid-20s crisis. I was like, yeah. I don't know what to do with my life. And then ended up starting Rex because of this guy. He got really sick. Okay. And I was
Who's
like, I don't
guy?
Know what to do. This is Sir Francis Drake. He is he's my dog. He is our mascot over at Rex. And also Chief De-Stressing Officer. He'll go and kind of sit on your lap. That's like what he's doing right now. But yeah, I mean, that's pretty much kind of how I got into the animal health realm was because of that little guy over there.
Now, Amato, tell me the truth. In software development, the absolute worst part of software development is users. There's no doubt about it. As far as you were saying, being a professor, is the worst part really students? Don't say it on camera. You know what? I'm going to back that out. We'll cut that out in post-production. We'll just go from there. Tell us a little bit about what Rex Animal Health is.
Yeah, so at Rex, what we are is we are a data and analytics company taking a big data approach on using animal health data, everything from what they eat to the different diseases that they have to even, you know, the eventual agronomic output, whether it's milk quality or carcass quality, and combine that with genomic information, information about the animals themselves and also the diseases that they're exposed to. So that way we can crunch all that data together and really provide the best practices in order to hopefully increase margins, increase productivity on the farms, and help along the food supply chain, whether it's pharmaceutical companies figuring out what's the most effective drug, what drugs should I be making, how should we make them, all the way down to the whole farm-to-table movement, what, you know, which animals are really antibiotic-free, what's the best quality for price, is it truly, you know, organic, and all those buzzwords and marketing buzzwords there. So it's
quite sophisticated here. Nothing simple that you've kind of tackled on here. How big is Rex? How long have you been around?
So we pivoted to this in April 2015.
Okay.
Originally, when we first started, we were sort of like a ZocDoc for pets thing, but we went through the TechStars program, and literally within 2 weeks, we got told by the mentors, you need to pivot. And so after a panic attack and some sort of like, what do we do now? We went for what was the long-term vision of what Rex was going to be back then, which was a sort of population health type play. And we kind of evolved into this whole precision husbandry type angle that that is really interesting.
Nice. Now, Rachel, let me ask you. So here we have Rex Animal Health, and of course, you know them, but what is it that you saw? What was it that brought us to the solution we have right now? What was the kind of the state of nature at that beginning?
Yeah. Well, you know, like I said, Amato and I have known each other for a couple of years, and I'd heard that his startup had gotten some support from Microsoft. And so we were on the phone one day, and I was like, well, cool, what are you doing on Azure? And he was like, nothing. And so we kind of started talking about, you know, was there something that he needed, or was there a certain technology he was interested in trying out? And of course, that went into a big conversation, and we kind of decided to narrow down and look at the web app offering, right? Because the Amato can speak to this a little bit, you know, better than I can. But of course, this startup is all about taking this data and then bringing it to customers, right? And so we started going down this path of like, cool, how's your website served up? How are you hosting? How are you deploying that? And when we started the conversation about Azure Web Apps, it seemed like a really cool opportunity to kind of dive in on Azure. I think Amato had an Azure account but hadn't really dug into what Azure was and what it did. And so this was kind of like our first toe in the water.
Got it. And speaking of water, this is almost like those swimming pools that have those gradual kind of walkways in. That's what a web app is, right? That's as gradual as you can get, as easy a starting point. All right. So what's next? What's step number one, Tim? Tell me.
Well, it was assessing what they already had. So they were doing all the deployments on infrastructure. So we were looking at that, trying to address, you know, what things would easily convert to a web app and what services they were already using on those boxes. It was fun. It was it started with getting together at a hack fest, right?
Yes.
So we had Rex and Rachel and a whole bunch of other groups of people doing similar stuff sitting together in the reactor, just over there. I can see the space where we sat all week, and we just spent a week looking at it and working on it. It was a lot of fun.
Now, Amato, as a startup, obviously one of your most valuable assets is time. And then for these guys to come and say, "Hey, we've got something to do." Now that we're looking back on the solution, how do you feel like that investment of time was? Was it easier than you thought?
How do I put it this way? So I'm a technical co-founder in that I know the bioinformatics and the data science behind what we do. But when we were on our old provider, I had no idea what was going on. I wrote the Python code and I was like, you guys do whatever it was. So I was pretty intimidated when I was like, okay, we're going to see about transferring to Azure. But, you know, whether it's way easier or Rachel and Tim just were amazing teachers, in the end, I was like, oh, I just do this, 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 and then deploy. And they're like, yeah, that's what you do. And I was like, oh, my God, and it integrates with GitHub, and I don't have to worry about all these different things. There was a learning curve in the whole, like, okay, you press different buttons, but it was far more intuitive for me to go, because in the end, after they did sort of the setup and I was watching what they did for part of it, with the second one, it was like, oh, we just do this and this, and then it went through. And I think we got rid of a couple, we got rid of a lot of code that wasn't needed anymore when the infrastructure had changed from where we were originally to the whole kind of web app virtual machine type interface. That was some of the confusion. It was like, what does all this code do? And we're like, oh, it's making it communicate with each other. But when we switched to Azure, that wasn't needed anymore.
Wow. So it even got simpler than before. Rachel, as you go through the process, I think it's surprising to a lot of developers that Python is even in this conversation. And the fact that Azure has all these different languages supported, did that help the migration process?
Yeah, absolutely. So, and I'll kind of piggyback a little bit on what Amato was talking about when he was mentioning, you know, we got rid of all this code. It's funny, actually, one of the biggest artifacts of this was not that we created more code, but that we actually took out a lot of code. And so part of the reason was, you know, initially we had some, the setup was Python running on one VM, and then a web app stood up on a separate VM. And so there was this whole layer of middleware that the only thing that middleware was doing was basically standing up localhost on the VM as a web app. And when I saw that, I'm thinking, if we move this to Azure Web Apps, like Azure's going to take care of all this stuff like installing dependencies and, you know, pulling down this and that. And so we were actually able to, I think, several thousand node module files, we were able to just completely take out.
Wow.
It was amazing, actually. When I saw the node modules folder in the project, of course, this always happens, right? You get dropped into a project that you've never seen before, and you're like trying to figure out, okay, what's the tech stack, and like try to get into the mind of the web developer. So I saw a node modules folder, and I'm thinking, okay, this is a node app. It took a while before I realized actually the web app itself had no node backend. All of the node stuff was just there to stand up the website on the VM, and so we were able to eliminate node completely from the entire project.
Wow.
Angular based, but not Node was not really a requirement for the web app, just for that like standing up localhost on the pre-existing VM. So by moving to Azure Web Apps, we're able to say, like, you know what, we put this in a config file, Azure gets our package.json and our .bourrc file, and like it gets installed and we don't have to think about it.
Yeah, just from a maintenance point of view, removing that much code is beautiful. Taking any part actually of the technology stack out is a beautiful thing to be able to do. What's the final solution look like, Rachel? Where are the pieces that really you put the most work into?
Yeah, so I'd say, like, really when I look back at the project, you know, Tim did a really great job of talking about what our final solution was, which, again, we started with two VMs on AWS. We moved kind of lift and shift, moved one of those to Azure, kept it pretty much as is, and that was where the Python was running, as Tim mentioned before. And then that second VM, instead of just moving that to an Azure VM, which we could have done and that would have worked, there was an opportunity to change that and say, let's do an Azure web app here. Let's cut out all this middleware stuff. Like, I don't need to be able to like SSH into this. I really just want like a website, right?
Yeah,
And I think one really big advantage that we saw with this as well is that Rex was already using GitHub repositories for this code. So the fact that we were able to just basically click log in and link it, and then the app is deployed, was a huge thing. And especially for like a startup where there's, you know, sort of tight turnaround times and you want things to just like work when you update them, that was a really awesome feature. It was also just a really good intro to Azure. I know that, Amato, you've been interested in Azure Machine Learning and some of the other things that are kind of part of the Azure family. And so I think an Azure web app was a really cool opportunity to say, like, let's do something pretty straightforward. Let's get used to the portal. We did, of course, we want to say, like, everything went perfect the first time. But of course, like, we had a little bit of debugging to do. So we got to actually go into the Kudu, you know, kind of pull back the curtain, so to speak, go into the Kudu console and say, oh, you know, some installation failed. Let's take a look at that. And we actually got to see, like, there is, it's not like serverless, you know, there is like a machine somewhere. We just, usually we don't care about it, but sometimes we do care about it. And so we actually had the opportunity to go in and say, like, oh, you know what, this install failed because this dependency clashed with this one. Let's go fix this, redeploy, and then, you know, it's fixed. So it was kind of cool to do that and kind of get a guided tour to Azure in the process.
Now, Amato, being able to do your work, put it into GitHub, and then have it an automatic process, push it out into your website, is that actually valuable to you?
Oh, my God, yeah. Because now our software team no longer has the excuse of, I still have to push it. I'm just like, it's connected. I need to see it. We need to see what's going on. And so having that automatic, hey, you just make a change and it's already kind of uploading and changing, has been really useful, especially from having a development environment and then kind of having the production environment afterwards. It's made it a lot cleaner and a lot simpler. We could always see things in real time. We don't have to be like, okay, where's the local host right now? How do we connect into the local host? There's none of that anymore because we can just see it.
Yeah. And
sometimes there's like some last minute debugging before we talk to a potential customer when we add new data and it sort of crashes something because there's new data. But it's been good because it's sort of, you know, closest to like really live programming from what I see, where it's you make a change and it's there within a minute, depending on really the connection. So that's been actually really advantageous for us. And it's been useful in helping, you know, people who aren't as well-versed in this sort of infrastructure. Like I wasn't. I really had no idea what was going on. I had relied on the other engineers, and being able to sit with both Rachel and Tim, I was like, oh, I get what's going on now, even if it's just a high level, which has definitely helped. Whereas on the other service we used before, I was like, there's too many. I don't get it.
Yeah. Now, from a strategic point of view, the value is obvious. Like you and I could talk at a real high level to say, we scale in customers or we scale in data or we scale in whatever. I don't add another VM. I just kind of slide that little slider up to make it bigger, right? It's pretty magical.
Yeah.
Now, but only you can really answer. You have a dev team and you're really moving from one like answer to another answer. And, you know, they picked one and now you're moving to another. What was their final reaction to the whole thing?
Everybody sort of, there was that initial learning curve on the Azure portal. I mean, I experienced it myself too, because our previous solution kind of had like, here's everything and you just have to know where to click. Whereas here it was, you kind of have to search first, then you can kind of put it into your dashboard. Once we sort of put all the important things there and I said, this is what this is, this is what this is, this is what this is, it went pretty seamless from there. You know, kind of migrating everything on over. And the nice thing that we liked, especially afterwards, is while when Rachel and Tim were sort of working on the other things, I was playing with the Power by BI and the Machine Learning Studio. Rachel showed me some of the things on Machine Learning Studio where it's like, okay, you have this already. Now you could just take this two lines of code or whatever and then deploy it here and that'll do it for you. We were able to take some of our, you know, straightforward and kind of complicated predictive epidemiology code that we had developed, put it into machine learning, and then we said, okay, this is what's going on, to where we were showing some of our customers who are veterinarians and livestock farmers, they're not really into this. We're just press this, this, and this, and you can get an answer. They're like, I know how to use this. I'm like, yeah, it's ugly. We'll make it better. And they're like, no, this is fine.
Yeah.
So
because some of these things they've never seen before, because you're giving it to them kind of seeing tomorrow. You're like, oh, this is where we are, but I've got this coming. They've never even seen today before, right?
Yes.
They're in shock.
Yeah. And, you know, we finally figured out some of the Power BI stuff, and that visualizations are way better than anything we built ourselves. We're just sort of debugging and having to clean up some of the, you know, like I said, we have terabytes of data, of animal health data, and kind of putting that in is non-trivial in sort of the MySQL in the structured databases, so that it can be easily queried. But having that sort of, here's other things that we don't have to worry about building ourselves anymore, has made a lot of production faster.
Yeah,
so,
of course.
I mean, there's a learning curve, but eventually everybody was on it. And as Rachel mentioned, we are sponsored by Microsoft. So we just sort of look at this budget and we're like, should we try these other things? I'm just like, yeah, it's cheap. Just go.
Shazam. Yeah. Now, Rachel, this isn't a web app solution. This sounds like a machine learning solution, but at the same time, it sounds like ML was an afterthought almost, just kind of tacked on. Why do you think ML seems so difficult? And then when we talk to customers, they're always stunned by how simple it is. What's going on?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, actually, Azure ML was one of the first, my first forays into Azure. So from my perspective, it was like always easy. I don't know. I always thought it was kind of, just a powerful tool, easy to use. I had the benefit of seeing Jennifer Marsman talk a lot about, actually, I sat in on like a multi-hour workshop that Jennifer Marsman gave on Azure Machine Learning. So I don't know. I think I'm a little spoiled in that sense. But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, machine learning, a lot of regular people don't ever see what's behind the curtain and just assume it's like, you know, something incredibly complex. And I think it is, but it's cool that Azure Machine Learning has a sort of that drag and drop interface and this sort of sandboxy, playgroundy thing where we can start trying something. You know, my experience, and Amato, I think yours too, is like you build a model, and at first it's like, okay, it's like better than guessing, but not great. But then you have this opportunity to refine. It's never like, I feel like sometimes when I'm writing, let's say, some JavaScript, it's like it either works or it doesn't. There's not a lot of in between.
Yeah.
Well, maybe JavaScript's a bad example there, but but with machine learning, you know, it works, but it's not great. And then you refine and you say, oh, actually, I bet this, like, there's this column of data that's throwing things off, or this isn't quite, this shouldn't be treated as a number, it should be treated as a string, or things like that, where you can go in and sort of refine and get things looking better and better.
Tim, what kind of luxury is it to have all your data in the same set of services so that everything's in Azure, so I'll just point this extra little thing to it and this extra little thing to it?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the benefit, right? You get to say, I've got all this stuff, I want to do other stuff with it, start tacking stuff on and really light stuff up for customers really fast.
It's not like the solution isn't there for other services as well. It's just that you don't have to even think about ingress or egress, and you have you're sitting right next to it in the same data center. Everything's so fast and easy and clean, and it's a beautiful thing. Amato, what's the future? What do you think's next for Rex Animal Health?
So, you know, for us, when we first started, we were really concerned more about just being a data warehouse. And then eventually we built the tools around it. Now we're at a phase where I think in the past 6 months, we've generated, like I said, about 50 terabytes of genomic data. So what we're doing is, one, we're getting it peer-reviewed. We're writing some papers on, we found some correlations on different genes and what we believe to be disease resistance. And so we're going to be developing some actual hardcore biotech, sort of think like 23andMe for livestock, except, concerned with disease resistance, like, hey, is your cow resistant to disease X or disease Y? And then we'll be taking those data and really bringing it back into the machine learning algorithms that we've used to develop predictive epidemiology, but also taking kind of our data-driven husbandry to work. Like, we want our platform to not only say, okay, here's the diseases that your animals can have, how to treat them, but here's bull A, here's heifer B. Their calves are most likely going to have traits ABC, so you want that one to be dairy, you want that one to be beef. And this is how to maximize that kind of agronomic output, like, hey, this is what needs to be done to have really high fat milk, or this is what needs to be done to have high protein milk.
And that level of diagnostics, I mean, that's complexity. It takes a lot of data, it takes a lot of horsepower, it takes a lot of data science knowledge and industry knowledge as well. The future seems pretty bright for Rex Animal Health. We're awful glad you guys are on Azure. Amato, thanks for being on the show today.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
And Tim, it's always great having you on the show, man. Keep the fort down at the reactor.
Yeah, we'll do.
Yeah. Rachel, thank you. Good job on this project.
Thanks.
All right. We'll see you guys. Thanks. We'll see you guys again.